Welcome to this special episode of I'm In, the Institute of Hospitality's official podcast hosted by me, Phil Street, FIH. Hot in the heels of our International Women's Day special back in March, we decided there were still some things left unsaid, as well as having some great feedback on our panel. So I, once again, re-invited Lizzie Grundy AIH and Tracy Fairclough FIH to explore the work we still need to do in gaining some degree of parity for women in the workplace. So without any further ado, let's just get straight to it. Hello and welcome to this special episode of I'm In, the Institute of Hospitality's official podcast, hosted by me, Phil Street, FIH. Now, back in March, we launched a special episode centred around International Women's Day. If you haven't had a listen to that, I'd suggest going to do that before you get stuck into this one, because basically what we're going to do is just carry on that discussion from previous. So you might want to hear all of that before we get into today's chat. Why are we doing it again, I hear you ask? Well, why not, is my honest response. But also, in all seriousness, it was felt that we did leave a bit out there to be discussed. So this is what part two will be all about. Feedback on our amazing panel that day was also wonderful. So we thought we'd try to get the band back together again.
Nearly did.
Not quite. But in any case, we welcome back Tracy Fairclough, FIH, and Lizzie Grundy, AIH. And unfortunately, Kat Price was not able to make it today. We did have a fill-in, but unfortunately, Victoria is not able to make it either. So we're just going to get stuck into it, see where it goes, cover some stuff that we left uncovered. But welcome back to the show, ladies.
Thank you so much, Bill. Hi.
Thanks for having us.
How are you both doing?
You're not bad.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Good. So just a quick reminder, Tracy, if you want to just go first, just who you are and what it is that you do.
Oh, right. Hello, everyone. My name is Tracy Fairclough, and I am the founder and MD of the TAF Catering Consultancy. So predominantly, I get involved in consultancy advice provided mostly to corporates, but anyone who's got a workplace where they need to feed their people every day, whether it's white tablecloth, fine dining, whether it's hospitality, meeting room, tea points, workplaces, but it's feeding many people within a workplace context.
Fantastic. So not a lot then. You're just, you know, quietly getting on with things.
Oh, I really enjoy it. It's my dream job because it's a mixture of literally listening and then collaborating with specialist partners and coming back with solutions. And this is a world that's evolving and changing at the moment. So it's pretty exciting. Lots of new stuff going on.
Fantastic. Well, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And just over to you, Lizzie. How are you? And just tell the world who you are and what it is that you do.
Yeah, so hi. I'm well, thank you, Phil. I'm Lizzie Grundy. I am a youth council member at the Institute of Hospitality, and I'm currently a graduate manager at Penny Hill Park, which is a luxury property in Surrey, on a rotational 2-year management programme after finishing my degree a couple of years ago in international hospitality management. So I'm a fresh into the industry person.
Fantastic. Yeah, and you're on the youth council. Just give us a quick overview of what that involves.
Yeah, so we're basically a group of, we try not to exclusively say young people, and we always kind of had the chat as if we were to rename ourselves, would we include youth? Because it's not just about young people, it's about people starting off in the industry, and we're just kind of there to help people make that transition at the start of their careers, get into networking and meeting other people, and creating that foundation and to try and get new talent into the industry, which is what we need.
Nice. So entry-level council or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, entry-level council. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds terrible, but
anyway, I know.
But welcome back to you as well. As I said, we were supposed to welcome Victoria. I don't know what's happened to her. Bless her. I hope she's doing okay. She may well jump into the call. She may well not. We'll just see how it goes. But we've got two awesome people on the show anyway, so we'll just get cracking. So one of the pieces of feedback that we had from our last chat was that we're all quite an optimistic bunch. And actually, we were focusing quite a lot on the progress that had been made so far. But I absolutely did not want to skirt over the fact that there are probably still some challenges out there that we were facing for women in the workplace. So I just wanted to kind of, I don't want to make this the negative podcast, because that's not what it's about. We're all an optimistic bunch. You can solve all problems with optimism. I believe that wholeheartedly. But yeah, I feel it's really just a kind of, I suppose, to give us some insight into what have we still got to do to gain some parity in the workplace for women. So with that in mind, I'm going to kick it off with a very open question, and either of you feel free to jump into this, which are, what are some of the main challenges that women still face in the workforce today?
Lizzie, do you want to go first?
I was going to say, I don't mind jumping in. Yeah,
go on.
Yeah, I think in terms of main challenges, there's obviously like a few key ones in terms of maternity leave, kind of how that's integrated into a woman's role, how it's handled with people leaving the business, coming back from the business. And I think even though it doesn't affect all women, it affects quite a large proportion of, and in turn affects men as well. So I think the topic of maternity and paternity leave is quite a big challenge in terms of being a woman in any industry, really. I think a topic which kind of swings both ways is flexibility in shift work, whereas it can really be ideal for a lot of women when it's used in the right way, and when it's used to the benefit of the people rather than the benefit fully of the business. So even though it is benefit, it can also be quite a challenge as well. But yeah, I'd say maternity leave.
Yeah,
in terms of challenges.
Do you know what? You just sparked a memory. Something that I remember. I don't think they would say this these days, but you know the series The Apprentice. I think it might even be currently running. I don't watch it anymore, but I used to watch it avidly when I was a younger man. And I remember this was back in the days when they were actually offering a job to somebody. And I remember, I don't know if it was Sir Alan Sugar himself or Lord Sugar as he is now, I think. But I'm talking about amongst his two people about the fact that it might be tricky to take this person on because they're probably going to have children in the not too distant future. And I just, even then, this was like 20 years ago, I remember thinking to myself, can we say that on telly? Like, is that the right message to send to people? But if that was the perceptions 20 years ago, I definitely feel like the perceptions have changed. But what do we still have to do? How can we make a difference when it comes to, I suppose, improving career prospects for people who find themselves having to take maternity?
No, I was just going to say that I actually looked at this study that was done earlier on this year, and it's the source is Hi Bob. And it's an organisation that says that they help HR professionals and organisations. And they did a study, and the universe was 2,000 people, 59% female, 31% male. Basically, 44% based full-time in the office, 43% adopting a hybrid working model. Geographically, 20% in London, 20% in the southeast, 10% in Scotland. Those are the notable kind of areas. Company sizes, 35% on average were from medium-sized companies, 31% in both small and large. And various contributors, 30% managers, 11% decision makers, and 10% C-suite. And the five key takeaways from the research is that number one is the majority of women missed out on 2023 pay rises and were promoted without increased compensation. This is going to change the tone of this conversation today compared to the one we had last time.
For sure.
Number two is women's high confidence is undermined as they report feeling less qualified due to their gender. So this took place in January. So this wasn't long ago, and it was completed at the end of January. Number three, there's a persistent perception of pay inequality favouring men that stems from lack of salary transparency. And I think that's the focus of everything I've done for today is we've historically lacked the transparency and sharing that information. And now the obviously social media, all those things that were lacking in transparency 20 years ago, that's no longer the case. We almost like to share more than we've ever done before. Number four is women expect stable work-life balance, and they have optimism, but there are significant challenges, and female employees are spearheading high retention intentions. So in conjunction with what you've said, there's that interesting, things are different now to what they were. But just to add to this, a personal experience is I had a conversation with a friend of mine. So we're literally early 50s. And I spoke to her about a work situation. And I said to her, why don't you just take your skills and go and get more money elsewhere? And she said to me, Tracy, I've been a working mum. I don't earn as much as you think I earn, because whilst everyone else here was being promoted, mostly men, getting pay rises over the last 20 years, I was a working mum and wanted to just keep the job.
Right. And do you think that response from her comes from that was her desire, or do you think it was kind of one of those things whereby she felt like that's what she had to do rather than what she wanted to do?
It was quite alarming for me to hear that, because this is someone who is a peer. You know, you have your mates, you have your friends, you go off. You actually don't know I didn't know really what your friends did, really. And then it comes to your 30s and then suddenly you take a bit more of a notice. So I kind of vaguely know she's in broadcasting, basically. And yeah, I was really shocked, really, really shocked, because there's a, you know, again, you kind of expect and you assume now that things are a hell of a lot more transparent than they ever were. I just assumed that, you know, she'd progress through because she has the title that would suggest that she, you know, she has the salary to go with it. And yet she's saying, no, it's never been that way, which was quite surprising to me.
Yeah. And I suppose, I'm guessing that her story is not a lone tale as well, is that there, you could probably find an awful lot of people who are in exactly the same boat. And I know that, you know, parenthood can be one of those things whereby your priorities do change as individuals, and that's men and women. But then I suppose the perception is that we're still maybe a little bit too focused on the old roles of the man and woman in a relationship, is that, you know, the woman, you know, looks after the kids and the house, and the man goes off and earns the bread and all of that kind of stuff, which is obviously, I definitely don't feel like that is the general perception of the workforce, but it's still not being reflected in perhaps everybody's opinion on, you know, actually how do we continue to get women being able to make the same progress as men, even if they're going to take a year or 2 years out through maternity. Lizzie, what are your thoughts on that? I feel like you've been chomping at the bit to chip in.
Well, it's interesting you said that, should it be that the roles are more evened out and more equal? And I think that's not really an opportunity that presents itself in our current climate. It's not saying, why don't we pass the baton to men to look after children, when realistically that's not always possible. But it's more the fact, in what household can you have single income kind of situations? Like if you're running a two-person household with children, you both probably most likely to be working. And it's where you try and like balance it out, but actually the workload is just getting more, where it kind of made sense back in the day when, you know, the mum would stay at home with the kids and the dad would go off to work, but that's because the mum wouldn't need to work, and that's where the job kind of came from. And then the instruction of like the, I can't remember the word for it now, but like the dual load of kind of doing both, when actually it's a lot of situations now are two parents trying to provide two incomes and doing their childcare. And I think there isn't a lot of wiggle room for one of them to be like, no, I'm going to break the norm and my husband's going to stay home with the kids. Like, we can't do that in most situations. So we're trying to kind of like fight off this stereotype, and whilst trying to be like the best parents you can be. I mean, I'm lucky enough, I guess, that I'm not a parent at the moment and kind of progress my career as much as I can now. But it kind of looms over you being like, at some point I'm going to have to make that sacrifice. So yeah, I think it's not very, there's no given answer to it really, because I know there's not a lot of wiggle room.
Yeah, and actually the point you make there around it looms over you, it's probably, I think, the way the vast majority of people would be feeling in your situation, whereby if that is in your plans, you know, they might be very loose in whatever form, and at the moment you're focused on your career and you want to make progress in that. But at the same time, if having a family is important to you at some point in your life, then yeah, I mean, how do we get round this looming feeling that you have that this is something that's, you know, that's absolutely, it's going to potentially stop me in my tracks from a career perspective and change the focus of my life? Or is that just something that we just have to accept is part and parcel of wanting to become a parent? God, we're a hospitality podcast now, or a parenting podcast. But it's an important question though, isn't it, in terms of how you build your career?
I think it comes back to the point of flexibility that Lizzie mentioned earlier, is that, you know, it shouldn't be whether you're a parent, whether you're juggling children, it should come into play that we are humans. We're going to be juggling stuff. You know, it could be, you know, as we talked about last week, it could be aging parents. It could be the menopause. Again, Lizzie, you mentioned that. But I mean, this body of research, again, you know, it almost suggests that the three top responses, and this was all about the way the question was asked, what would lead the respondents to consider changing their jobs? 83% overwhelmingly cited a pay increase as a decisive factor, with 60% of this group being women. The emphasis on financial incentives echo a prevailing concern for equitable compensation, particularly amongst females. Number two, 53% indicate that flexible work conditions would be a compelling reason to switch jobs. So if these are reasons to switch jobs, they're also reasons to stay in the job that you've got. So it's almost coming down to the employer being a bit more diligent. The third reason for people to change jobs is 32% state job security. So reflecting a shift from the previous year's priorities where pay, flexible work conditions and a strong and healthy workplace culture held the top positions. So job security, maybe this comes into play with the level of uncertainty around the economic environment. But you just think, actually, if we paid people more, they had flexible work conditions and there was job security so that your job wasn't at risk, then maybe you could retain people longer or better and stop them from, you know, going elsewhere. I don't know. This whole body of research was fascinating because it almost, I was super positive after the last podcast because I found all this research and maybe I was looking for the positives in it. As you said, we're very optimistic. Whereas actually we're looking at cold, hard facts and the results of a survey where 2,000 people were asked very key questions. And it's a little bit kind of challenging and concerning because the outlook perhaps is not as positive as it was last time. I don't know, Lizzie, what do you think, or Phil?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that people kind of, realistically, the answer is kind of pay people more, give them what they want, flexible hours, but it's not always within a business's remit to do that. And I think it's interesting how job security is quite high up there in terms of what people would desire, a desirable like factor in like what they were looking for in a new opportunity, because it used to kind of be, oh, you have to like hop around and climb the ladder really fast, but actually people actually want to know that they're going to have a job and they're not going to be at risk. I think especially since COVID happened and a lot of people were kind of let go, made redundant, it's kind of good to see that people want to stick around and have that longevity so that they can progress in their own environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think your point around the current economic situation of the world, which frankly with every day is just like, oh God. So you're even as an optimist, I'm like, geez Louise, what, mm-hmm. What's happening next? You know, in times of volatility, I think people do seek stability, you know, in any way that they can find it. And this is a general statement, of course, and everybody's very, very different. But I see this from a recruitment perspective, is that if there's any kind of volatile pressure in the economic place, as in, you know, maybe there are less jobs, that's not something that I think hospitality currently has a problem with. But nevertheless, the margins for businesses are really stretched. People are probably being paid about what they can be paid now. There's not a lot of wiggle room in that respect. So stability then becomes the primary objective, because, you know, you're better the devil you know than the devil you don't, right? And that last person in, first person out kind of syndrome that hangs over the head if you change jobs in a time of volatility. But obviously sometimes that's just not possible. You have to change jobs because maybe you're going to remortgage this year and your mortgage repayments are going to go up by £400 a month. And the only way you're going to be able to cover that is by increasing your income. And if you can't do that in your current place of work, then what choice do you have but to look elsewhere? So, yeah, I mean, at the moment of time we find ourselves in, I think there's a lot of pressure coming at people from all angles. But I think there's also an acceptance, a general acceptance, that is the way things are right now, but they're not necessarily going to be that way forever. I bloody hope not, at least.
Yeah.
But actually, coming back to your point, Tracy, on the transparency of information, I'm actually quite intrigued by this, because I think we talked about this in the last chat that we did as well, about actually you can see that progress is being made because now we're being a bit more transparent with information. How important is it that we keep just calling stuff out as we see it?
Do you know what? I think we're in a period of massive change, and I think rather than fighting the transparency, it's clear from definitely from all the bodies of research that I've kind of cast my eyes over in the last, you know, few months, it is about, you know, this level of transparency forced on by social media, because everyone has a voice and everyone can be heard. You don't have to anymore go and write a letter to the Prime Minister and hope that they hear, or send a letter to businesses. You can call them out directly. and actually that's what people are doing. And I think, you know, just embrace it. You know, transparency is good. It's not a bad thing. It means you're being honest and open. And I think sometimes, you know, being transparent, you know, with, you know, this is the role, this is what it requires in terms of roles and responsibilities, and this is kind of, you know, what you can expect to receive in terms of salary. If you're open and someone gets a promotion, and you actually see that the reason that person's got the promotion is because they've aspired to achieve A, B, and C, which you at the same level, you can see how they've done it, how they've achieved it, and you can see that they, you know, yes, they get a pay rise. Maybe that's how we need to be speaking. You know, and actually, if you can see that someone has achieved something because they've worked hard. One of the questions you asked us was where have you seen across the industry companies that are doing amazing work? And actually, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was there was this really amazing event that was put on by the caterer, Baxter Story, Tugo, and RDA. So you've got the caterer, which has been going since 1878, which is a multimedia platform. You've got a caterer, Baxter Story, which is British and, you know, phenomenal, one of the biggest in the country. And then you've got Tugo, which, you know, provides food service concepts for schools. So again, you've got four different routes, and you've got a design, RDA, who do design. You've got four different routes to cascade a message from above. They brought all these women together for an event, and they talked about key takeaways and key messages. And one of the things that they did was they brought in women who occupied kind of top spots, you know, and you know, had achieved lots. And one of those was Ruth Hanson. And when you get someone like a female who has achieved greatness, they're award-winning, they have lots of accolades, they have a great following, they're very charismatic, they've opened restaurants with their names above the door, then you get people, women looking up, and you think, you know, they've achieved all of that, how do they do it? And you think, we've got that level of transparency where Ruth is standing up and saying, well, I did it through hard work. You know, it was, you know, juggling. You need measures in life. You need to measure yourself against peers. And I think the measurement could be the transparency in pay. You know, this salary, this role, this restaurant, to have a restaurant, it you know, you need to put this into it. I don't know.
Yeah. Lizzie, any thoughts on the transparency or anything that Tracy's just said?
Absolutely. I mean, transparency. I can't imagine how different it would have been if I'd have, I don't know, been in my career 20 years ago, because now I'm constantly looking about how people have like climbed the ladder. Like, I'm constantly on LinkedIn looking at people's employment history. How long were they in jobs for? What were they doing in those jobs? How have they got to the position they're in? And I mean, I can't measure how much that's helped me in terms of trying to find a direction for my career path, but without it I'd be lost. And I think transparency, I mean, we're kind of falling into a time where you have to have it, like you say, with social media, everyone knows what's going on in everyone's life, whether it be work, like private life, anything. I mean, LinkedIn is crazy how much people put on there. And I think the transparency, as long as it's kind of used effectively, I think it's great, because I think it will only kind of make things easier for especially women who kind of can see people progressing and see how their career path has changed, and also kind of spot the bits where people are progressing without any kind of backing, or I don't know, we want to see how people have climbed ladders and done really well. So I like the transparency from a selfish point, because I'm nosy. But it's actually quite a good tool for in terms of inspiring both self and others.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And do you know the thing about transparency is that the companies and individuals who are being transparent are now all of a sudden becoming what we would consider to be the norm. So and it's taken a bit of time to get there. So the ones who are not being transparent, you then, I would imagine nowadays, you've just got a question mark that goes into your head and go, why are you not being transparent about that? And again, I'll put my recruiter hat on just for a second, again, whereby I see this even in the way that people write their job adverts, you know, and the thing that annoys me the most is when somebody puts competitive salary down. Look, see, Lizzie's gone as well.
Hate it.
Because it says nothing. Competitive in whose eyes, right? I mean, you know, and generally I think people only put that on when they know that they're not paying what they should be. That's just my own theory, at fear of eliminating all of my, or alienating all of my clients by saying such things. But I, you know, why, if you can pay £35,000 for something, put on there that you can pay £35,000. If it's £5,000 under where the market sits, then so be it. But, you know, if that's what your business can afford, there's no shame in that, you know. But being transparent and upfront about these things, rather than trying to force yourself to get to where perhaps the market is because of other forces that are in play, I say, you know, it's just part of the transparency element. Yeah. So, well, I mean, we've spent actually quite a lot of time, I suppose, talking about the maternity side of things. Menopause has also been mentioned, which is, you know, again, this is something that I can't quite believe that we're only really beginning to talk about this openly now. I mean, you know, I saw a documentary, I think it was last year, with Davina McCall, and I feel like that's the first documentary that I've ever seen on the subject in my life. And yet it is going to affect 50% of the population, more or less. So I think perceptions, again, are probably changing this, but there's probably a long way to go. But yeah, I mean, how does that affect women in the workforce at the time? I mean, again, either of you can jump in. Yeah, and what should companies be aware of when considering the menopause?
I think it's great that it's kind of becoming a topic that people talk about more, because it's ridiculous that, you know, there've been women in the workforce for years now. Like, women working is not a new thing, and yet such a physical, biological change that can be so impactful to a person can't be recognised is wild. I think it's great that people are talking about it, because the less kind of stigma around it, the better. Because how are you going to help women through that kind of time in their life without the knowledge and the power? I think it's about being understanding and recognizing everyone needs different needs, and knowing that it's you can't help it. It isn't always a negative thing either. Yeah, I just hope that the stigma decreases, and I hope that by the time I'm later on in life, it should be a well-handled topic.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, at the end of the day, it shouldn't be a disability. It shouldn't be something that prevents you. You know, it should become the norm, in terms of it's one of those things that perhaps for a certain time in your life, for a certain time frame, you know, you just have to be adaptive, and the people around you have to be adaptive. Like I said in the podcast from last week, you know, we're all humans, you know, and the fact that, you know, we're all different. We all have different background scenarios. We all, some of us have children, some of us don't. Some of us have elderly parents that are alive, some of us don't. Some of us have physical disabilities, some of us have invisible disabilities. Those could be men compared to the women who have go through menopause or have maternity. And I think, you know, we're definitely at this transitional era. We're in this transitional era where everything is transparent. And I think rather than rewriting our HR policies around things that we perceive to limit, it's just a case of being a little bit more understanding and a little bit more flexible. And I think because of the enormity of all the things that could prevent us from doing our job as well as we could and should, because we're thinking about, oh my God, how am I going to feed 3 kids? Or, you know, oh my God, I need to worry about my father who's going through dementia, or, oh my God, you know, I can't concentrate because my hormones are all over the place. You know, it shouldn't be about all these different things. It should be about, right, you know, this is where the flexibility is probably a topic of conversation that should be on everyone's agendas right now. It shouldn't be specific to a label. You know, and that label is female oriented or, you know, male oriented, or, you know, because, you know, quite frankly, we all have different things that could be perceived as a disability, you know. And I feel that, you know, again, it shouldn't be menopause specific. We should understand what the symptoms are. It's almost like a, you know, these are all the things that could prevent us from doing our job properly. You know, as a general HR brochure, this, you know, these are all the things that could get in the way. They could emotionally affect us. Perhaps we need to be a little bit more understanding. And then that could lead to maybe at the time in your life when any one of us are experiencing it, there's a handbook that says be a little bit supportive of your colleague, because, you know, this could be a time when they need you to kind of just be supportive. I don't know, but I do feel that we're on this cusp, you know, and this is where we're, because of the transparency out there, we're sharing a lot more, you know, it's we just need to deal with it and move on, you know. And I think just being accepting of the fact that there are all of these scenarios and circumstances and contexts that could play on any one of us at any moment in time is going to be quite key. And again, it comes back to flexible working conditions.
Yeah, and from the flexibility element, I mean, I think that the flexibility in certain areas of hospitality businesses is already in motion, specifically what I would classify as the support services, like sales, marketing, finance, admin, all of these things, that where people sit behind a desk, basically, because you can do that anywhere, really. But how do you bring in flexibility into, I suppose, the more front-facing things whereby your job is to be there for the guest? Is that just a case of, again, looking at who you have in your workforce and adapting your rota scheduling around that? Or are you seeing anything that people are doing well?
That's multi-skilling. I don't know how you feel, Lizzie. It's multi-skilling people up so that, you know, as you rota, if someone's having a bad time, then you can literally go to someone else, job sharing. You know, you've got all these different routes to fulfilling a role. And roles should be roles. They're not person specific. You know, I think we need to kind of just readdress how we look at the workplace, maybe. What do you think, Liz?
Yeah, I think like you say, kind of job sharing and being flexible, cross-training into different departments. Realistically, from like in the business I'm in, we've talked recently about how every department has their individual rota, but how much crossover is there in those rotas? We all work for the same business. We all, especially from an operational standpoint, work shift work. So I think the more flexibility we can give people, the better. I think there are going to be times where it is going to favour certain groups, but they are the kind of people who are going through it. So if you need to give someone who's a bit older a bit more flexibility because they're, like you say, they're looking after their parents, then that's kind of when the younger generation pick it up and they work those evenings and afternoons when there's doctor's appointments and visiting hours and things like that. I'd love to see more kind of cohesive, like, cross-training in the place I work, especially from someone who has done it. You are able to have more than one job role. I've literally been doing that for the past 2 years. Yeah, I think it's hard because every venue and place is so different and you've really got to manage your people. But I think, yeah, rotoring, having an approachable manager who does your rotoring and not someone who doesn't have a regard for your time. Yeah, it is people management, really, I'd say.
Yeah, probably stems from setting a wonderful culture. Again, just whereby, and you know, actually, I think the point about flexibility, maybe it's time to look at flexibility in job titles as well, right? Because as an example, somebody who is hiring a restaurant manager, they're brought in to just do that job. Why not have, you know, I can't even think of a job title we'd give it, but somebody who's coming in to do a restaurant manager job, but also something else in the business, because maybe that's what the business needs, but maybe the person who's coming into the business brings that skill set to it. So there's all manner of stuff, and I actually look to the tech industry as for my inspiration when it comes to trying to look at these things, because they are historically full of disruptors who just rip up the rule book of this, you know, and just they throw that thing out. This is the way we've always done it, so this is the way we have to do it going forward. If flexibility is to be a thing that's going to be really important to not just women but to everyone going forward, then maybe it's time we got flexible with the jobs that we give people when they come into our businesses. I know that's a sweeping statement and it's much easier said than done, but these things start with people coming up with stupid ideas like that. And then somebody else goes, actually, that's a good idea. I'm going to give that a go. So yeah, in any case.
Nothing's a stupid idea, Phil. I mean, I think I what the conversation is that that you're kind of suggesting is just rip up the rule book, you know, and actually you've got to think about this. It's got to start from the top. It's got to start from whose business is it? What do they want to achieve? So I'm going to set up TAF Restaurants Association, and I am going to have 6 restaurants, and they're going to be within hotels. That's my vision. How am I going to have 6 successful restaurants that perhaps deliver, you know, a Michelin star experience or the equivalent, you know, across all of the services? Well, I need these roles. Right. So these are the roles that are needed, not people. These are the roles that are going to be required. So we need the guest experience to start way before the guest arrives and so on. And you break it all down and then you basically define, right, how do we run it? And maybe you start with the first person you resource and the skills they can bring, like you've just said. And then it's the second, because it's got to be based on the people that you bring in. Yes, the roles are going to be, we need the customer to be, or the guest to be looked after from the moment we engage the very first time to the moment they leave, the moment they're literally going off, you know, and leaving our premises. But, and then maybe it's a case of just rewriting the handbook on, you know, how we approach and just literally throwing it all away and starting with the team of people that you've got there and saying, how do we rewrite things? What language shall we use, you know, to engage the people that sit behind the guest experience, you know? So maybe you're right. Maybe it's just throwing it all away and just saying, right, let's start from scratch.
Yeah, we need a test case, don't we? We need somebody to just do exactly that. Somebody who just wants to, I don't know, create this social impact of, it's not just about running a successful business. It's about showing us a way of doing things differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that's just where my thinking's at. I don't have the answers, but it's just, I suppose I'm better at asking questions than giving answers. But there we are. Well, I mean, here we are again. There's loads that we still, we're going to do a part 3, 4, and 5 as well. But the two main things that we've focused on today being maternity and menopause, are these the final frontier for women in terms of if we continue to make progress in these areas, have we solved the big picture then? Or what are the other areas that we still need to address when it comes to parity in the workplace?
I mean, one of the prompts we had about the Me Too movement, I think, is, you know, it's kind of a hard topic to explore because it does come from such negative stories and such negative experiences, but it's something that definitely had to be there. Something I think has definitely improved even in my time since starting my job at my first job I had at 15, the different experience I've had since then in terms of like respect for each other in the workplace is evolving, it's changing. But I think that is another thing that has to continue. And while we do have a lot more things that are kind of recognised being wrong in the workplace and outside of it, I think it's still definitely a movement that has to be there, and we've benefited from it being there as well.
That's a movement that's come about, coming back to the transparency element. That's come from a reverse transparency, I suppose, because that's not about the individuals who are doing wrong being transparent. That's about those being called out, basically, for doing wrong. But being transparent in that way. So, you know, and I suppose it comes to the point of, you know, we have still got to call out those who are not doing things as they should. And I'm always loath to just hang people out to dry when it comes to that, dependent on the, you know, how severe the issue is. But I would always, my personal preference is always to give people the opportunity to re-educate rather than just, you know, you did this, that's the end of you. But I don't know. That's just my thoughts. What are your thoughts on that? Or do you think we just need to absolutely, you know, go to town and get these things dealt with?
I think re-education is definitely key. Go on, Tracy.
No, I was just about to say, I mean, you know, to try and end on a high on this, because it's not all gloom and doom.
Is the
event that I spoke about earlier, which was the one that brought the caterer, Baxter Story, Chugo and RDA together. They, you know, I'd probably say the top takeaway is 3 changes that could promote greater diversity, and this is like from henceforth, and this is from everyone that spoke, is number one, see, and we kind of touched on it earlier, as see catering, contract catering, hospitality, you know, as vocations rather than just a job you fall into because there is nothing else for you to do. It needs to be, and that needs a bit more promoting. You know, there's not enough promoting out there. You don't switch the TV on, you don't see any great, you know, kind of chef sitting in front of you saying, I got into this because I did this and I was inspired by this person. And I think there needs to be more of that going on with women charging the way. I think number two is companies should not shirk away. There needs to be capital investment, there needs to be money injected into it. And I think there are so many organizations and corporates, definitely from my world where I provide advice, is rather than thinking it's a hospitality problem or a challenge, it should be people, you know, investing in making all these changes. And number three, it's about representing hospitality sector courses in at college and at universities and at schools and promoting apprenticeships and getting people to understand the breadth and the diversity of the different roles that sit within hospitality. And I just think, you know, there's if we do, you know, those things, so setting up these roles as vocations, so that's a perception job. It's investing in training people and in apprenticeships. And then number three, it's you know, more hospitality sector courses. Then I think, you know, you've got different forces at work perhaps to promote, you know, things differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, once again, I feel like I could chat to you guys forever about this. I think, you know, we have to continue having these conversations. My assumption is that we will do another chat of this kind at next year's International Women's Day, where perhaps we'll look back on the things that we've discussed and see if progress is continuing to happen, or whether it's, you know, been stopped in its tracks, and if so, by what, and what do we do about that? And there's always something to, I suppose, look at next. But I just want to thank you guys again for giving up your time to chat about this and being so unbelievably open. And I think even though we were talking a little bit more introspectively today about the perhaps perceived negatives, I still feel like there's enough will with the positivity in the room to be able to affect stuff going forward. So thank you once again for your time. It's been wonderful to chat, as always.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
Thanks for inviting me along.
You're very, very welcome. See you all again soon.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
I mean.
Today's special once again covered International Women's Day and featured Lizzie Grundy, AIH, Tracy Fairclough, FIH, and hosted by me, Phil Street, FIH. A huge shout out to the IOH's very own Sonia Cresswell, MIH, for the artwork and branding, and Leon Williams, FIH, for the music. To say I'm in and feature on a future episode, contact phil.street@instituteofhospitality.org. And to find out more about the IOH or to join our hospitality family, please click the links in the show notes. I'm super excited for the next one, where we'll be looking at running government through a hospitality lens. You won't want to miss that.